Blog Talk Radio.
Quiet, please. Welcome to Rex Sykes' Movie Beat, Conversation with Filmmakers, where we discuss everything film and television. Here on Movie Beat, you'll learn what to do and what not to do when it comes to making movies and TV. We will talk to everyone behind the scenes and in front of the camera, and they'll provide you with the guests and the information you're going to want to have, whether you're a filmmaker or a fan. And so now let's move behind the scenes at Movie Beat. I want to tell you, my guest today is Mr. Patrick Breen. He's the creator, writer, and actor of the web series Whole Day Down, and you're going to want to stay tuned for that. I'm going to tell you more about Patrick in just a second. Recent guest on my show was Willie Garson, who co-stars in Whole Day Down. You'll remember him from White Collar and Sex in the City and many other things. So it's a great day to talk about Whole Day Down, so stay tuned. As well, the chat room is open. So if you're listening live, you can join us right now in the chat room. And if you're listening archived, obviously that's not available to you. All of these shows are recorded live, and then they're archived. And you can hear them all live or archived at the official Rex Sykes Movie Beat website, which is REXSIKES.com. That's my name. It's REXSIKES.com. And right there at the interview blog, they are all there. There's a guest biography. You can read about my guest, and inside that biography is a link to listen live or archived. All right, so if you're listening live, join us in the chat room. And whether you're listening live or archived, here's what we ask you to do. Reach out and grab somebody else and have them listen with you right now. Okay? You can email them, call them, you know, grab them from across the room and say, hey, listen to the show. It's fantastic. And you can tweet about it. You can live tweet. You can put it on Facebook. You can use your favorite social media means to help us spread the word. Rex Sykes Movie Beat is really a resource for you. It's my way of helping connect you up with people who are professionals in the industry and who are making it happen. They share their expertise and their wisdom and their advice and their tips and secrets and golden nuggets with you to help you advance your careers and make your projects and get them done faster smoother and less expensively and get them to the marketplace and find an audience. So since my guests are willing to do so much for you, all we ask in return is two things. One, spread the shows. Spread the website. Let people know about the show and my guests. And connect up with your industry friends and coworkers and colleagues. And also leave comments at the player. You're listening to the show live or archived, you can leave comments right at the player. It may not be visible during the playing of the show depending on the browser that you use, but it is there. There's a comment window, so please leave comments. Also, if you get these shows, they're all available from iTunes as podcasts. Go and get the podcast, rate and review the podcast. That's how you can help us out in exchange for all this fabulous free information from my guests. All right. So without any further hesitation, let me tell you about my guest today. Patrick Breen is an actor. He's a founding member of the Naked Angels Theater Company and a member of MCC Theater. And as a writer, he's most well known for Just a Kiss, a movie directed by Fisher Stevens, released in 2002, starring Kyra Sedgwick, Marissa Tomei, Ty Diggs, Ron Eldard, and Marley Shelton. His Broadway credits include The Normal Heart, Brighton Beach Memoirs, and The Big River. Off-Broadway includes Fuddy Mears, The Substance of Fire, Celebration, The Room, View of the Dome, Baby Anger, The Hot House, and Life on a Limb. His films include roles in Men in Black, Get Shorty, Cirque du Freak, Radio, One True Thing, Christmas with the Cranks, Just a Kiss, and The Bleeding House. Television roles include The Good Wife, Nurse Jackie, Kevin Hill, Sex and the City, Law and Order, Will and Grace, CSI, Frasier, and 21 Jump Street. Mr. Breen's Los Angeles Art Gallery is depicted in the web series Whole Day Down. Patrick was born in Brooklyn, but he's raised in Staten Island. He's coming to us live from New York. Help me welcome Mr. Patrick Breen. How are you doing, Patrick? Are you there?
Yeah, very well, very well. I'm here.
Good, good. How are you? You're doing well today. All right, awesome.
Yes.
Well, and you are in New York.
Yes.
And you have a gallery on the West Coast.
I sort of wrote that to be kind of purposely mysterious, but we don't really have a gallery. I was just I just said that Willie and I were, because we play ourselves in the web series.
Yeah, all right.
Like sort of like, you know, weak versions of ourselves, as though we were struggling with our acting careers. Well, sometimes I do, Willie does not. We decide to open a gallery to make some extra money, you know, and also make a difference in the art world. We think this is what, this is our calling, is opening this gallery. So whenever I write about the web series, I always write as though it really existed, and perhaps I shouldn't be giving away secrets, but it doesn't really exist.
But it exists in the show.
It exists in the show, and there's a couple of, one of the storylines is that it's a real show, I mean, it's a real gallery, that it's completely improvised, and of course there really are scripts, so it's, we have fun with. The thing about web that I like so much is that the rules are being written now, and because I don't think I could have gotten away with some of the stuff that we're allowed to get away with in our show, because we don't have any studio. There's no, nobody's telling us, oh, that's too weird, or that's not funny, or that's confusing. You're not really helping the audience understand what's happening. We have alternative universes happen sometimes in the show. You know, there's clearly one of the characters is a minion of Satan's. And so I'm really enjoying the web, and that the freedom that's been, that it gives. And yeah, you do have to have money, although Ty Fossey, my co-creator and co-writer, and she's the great editor who puts all these things together after we shoot them. She's working with the idea of Kickstarter campaigns where you can kind of raise money for your web series. And people have been, you know, not everybody, I imagine, but there's been some people that are, you know, you have a good quality thing. People will donate $5 or $10 for a T-shirt or a, you know, a chance to, you know, get a DVD of the thing with autographed or whatever. And it supports the democratization of creating films, you know, and web series and series. And so I'm gung-ho about the web.
Well, that's very cool. The web is indeed a fascinating place. It's one of those. I had a guest on recently who's also doing a web series, and he made the point, which I want to reiterate, because I said, well, you know, everybody's trying to get millions and millions of hits, and he said, you don't need millions and millions of hits. He says, that's what everybody thinks you need. He says, all you need is the right person to see your show. And therein, truly, I think, is the secret of the internet. And while millions of hits are great because it lets advertisers know that there's an audience base and there's a platform from which to launch, you know, something else off of the success of a show. You know, it truly, you just need the right people to see it. And the same, I would venture a guess, is true about Kickstarter. You just need the right people, you know, who want to support and who like the effort, like the artist, like the concept, and contribute. Kickstarter has seemed to be, I've been tacitly involved with many Kickstarter campaigns. By that, mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't done any on my own, but I've helped promote some. And some people do exceedingly well, you know, and it's just a matter of getting the word out there. So you have this fascinating show. I love the show, by the way, and I want to give out the address. It's called Whole Day Down, and you can see it at wholedaydown.tv, wholedaydown.tv, or they can see it on YouTube also, because I watched episodes off of YouTube. And it's six episodes. Of a Hollywood-style web series, six episodes. There's also a Facebook fan page that they can go to, Whole Day Down on Facebook. So be sure to, listeners, as you're listening in, to visit visit the web series, go see it. And one thing that's interesting about the web series is it's you and Willie and Ty and Dan Fosse, I mean, you and other actors and other recognizable actors. I recognize them in the show. It seems to be shot similarly to a television show. You know, the episodes run about 7 or 8 minutes long, but it seems to be cut, what I would say television style versus like a movie style for the web. It seems to be shot for, and there's no laugh track, and there's lots of gags. And it's like, you know, I mean, it's a funny, conceptually funny show.
Thanks. Yeah, we don't, a laugh track, it's good. We had one episode where John Tenney plays an interviewer and is very suspicious of our claim that it's an improvised show, and so he finds all this evidence. He's kind of like an investigative reporter, and so we did it as though it were kind of a live show. So we have kind of a laugh, not a laugh track, but there's like applause and
inside there, yeah.
Where Willie shows a picture of his son Nathan, and the audience goes, "Oh,
right."
So it's like I want to use all the strange conventions of television and movies. And combine them, and then Ty's been is very adept at editing and creating things with her computer. And so I'll say, "Oh, can we do this? Can we do it like this? Can we make the character's eyes glow red? Can we?" And she's like, "Yeah, let me work on it." And she'll put in all these soundtracks and all the little sound and noises and things like that. And I go, like, I'm really having a blast with the kind of the collage of styles and media that we can kind of combine in a web series. I would do one that's completely animated. I would do one that was in a foreign language and dubbed, you know, and with just subtitles. Just do the whole thing like that. Do a silent movie in black and white like The Artist. I mean, it's like you can kind of. I'm really, really having a good time with the, so far in my limited experience, the limitless possibilities of what you can do in a 7-minute episode, you know.
Well, what prompted you to go to the internet, to develop a web series? The enthusiasm that you shared so far, but I mean, was there some impetus, some starting point that you went, I'm going to do this?
No, it was like Dan Fosse, the executive producer. He wanted to do a satirical film, a short film, on the art world. He's an art collector.
Oh, okay.
And Willie and I dabble. And so I wrote, so, you know, I had some ideas and things. And then I don't even remember how we settled on the web. I'd have to ask Ty, but it was like the film was sort of nixed pretty early. We thought, well, we've got Willie and me, and we're friends, and I've known Willie 20 years, and we thought, well, we're gallery owners. I guess I came up with that idea, and it's a fiasco. And it's like we just kept thinking, how can it just always turn out badly for these two characters? And then it evolves. I mean, the writing turned into, we wrote the first, the second episode and the third episode, which we did really improvise. We wrote scenarios, and then we tried just making up lines and, you know, honing them on the set. But pretty much it was all seat of your pants kind of improvisation.
Wow.
Episode 2 and 3. And then we had those two, and they were so strange, and they were just such losers. And then Ty and I thought, let's come up with a reason. Why are they failing so badly? Who are these characters? And then we just started making it deeper and richer. And then we wrote the pilot. So we had episodes 2 and 3, and then I wrote a pilot, which starts to introduce the idea that they are fated for some reason to fail. And then it became more and more apocalyptic. We thought we'd have Francesca character, who's also the daughter of Dan Fosse and the sister of Ty Fosse. It's a family affair here. And I've known Ty and Francesca since they were born, pretty much. And so we decided, well, what if she's working for Satan? She's got to collect Willie's soul for some reason. He lost his soul in a gambling blackout. So Willie a gambling addict. And it just, it got, the crazier it got, and the more we could kind of explain, the more we could come up with at least some sort of reasoning for the for these things taking place, you can kind of do anything. So we settled on the web, I think, because the film was sort of, film has been done. You know, what are we making a short film for? You know, it's like to be in a short film competition at Sundance or Slam Dance or some other crazy thing. And listen, there's nothing wrong with that, and I'll make more short films in the future probably. But the idea of making a series, making a story that lasts and can be kind of told and developed and deepened and made crazier, I just thought it was so much more fun, and we all agreed that it was more fun, and that we all wanted to make six episodes. And Dan was very game, because Dan put up the money and said, we made two. And he said, let's make four more. And so we were like, great. And so, you know, we all thought about what might come, and for Ty and myself and Jack Monroe, one of the other co-producers, would talk on the phone about what possible storylines would happen. And it got stranger and funnier, and some episodes where Dan was like, I don't know what's going on, but go ahead, make that one. And you would never get that from a studio. You know, I have no idea what you're writing or why this is funny or whether it is funny or not, but let's make that one too.
Cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Did you have any, some people are really good at it and others, you know, like, I think if somebody told me, and I've done some improv, but if somebody put a camera on me and said, you know, we're probably going to film this and put it up on the internet, and didn't give me the option to not say no, you know what I mean? I mean, in other words, you can always not put something up. But how was it for you to improv stuff versus script things? Are you do you and Willie just feel comfortable in that realm together? So that it works for you guys and you're able to go that route or?
Yeah, I think so. I think, in some ways, I think the improvised episodes are more successful than the ones that were scripted. There's something crazier and more spontaneous. And I didn't really have a handle on the story yet. And so when we started to write the subsequent four episodes, one was kind of the prequel, the pilot. It got a little too. Some of them were too scripted, in my opinion. And so, what I'd like for season two is to sort of see if we can come up with a kind of amalgam of the two, something sort of improvised and sort of like maybe just always have a scene or two in the show that's completely improvised, and just see what that does to the show. Script it, because the two episodes were scripted, episode two and three, but not with dialogue. If I'd read the way they had written scenarios for Curb Your Enthusiasm, it was just like, this happens and this happens and this happens, and then it's up to the amazing improvisers that they have on that show,
right, to
make it funny, and just come up with a funny way to say these scenarios, and we did a couple of takes of everything always, we were shooting on digitally, and the great the two DPs, Laura Beth Love and Jorge Urbina, they were game. We just shoot a bunch of stuff, and I was pretty much going, okay, leading the conversation. If somebody said something that reminded me of something, I would always go, okay, let's do it again, but this time say this. Like, put in something that like this. And then we would go back and shoot that again. And I'm sure there was a million pixels of, used to say feet of film, but I don't know how many billions of pixels we shot, but Ty looked at all the takes and found the funniest bits, and we put them together, and we edited, but there was something more spontaneous. I like the spontaneity of the improvised shows.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Let me switch gears just a little bit and talk about Ty Fosse and Dan. And Dan has produced TV movies and other things in the past. He's also acted and written and I believe directed. You maybe talk a little bit about Dan and your relationship to Dan and to Ty and her background and things, so that we get an idea of who the people are behind the scenes, because
sure.
You mentioned that Dan is producing and Ty is editing and also in it. So, mm-hmm. And they're both in it. So,
Ty's not in it, but
we're going to try
and convince her to be in it. But
my mistake.
She's a behind the scenes. She prefers writing and story creation and editing, and she's producing. You know, I mean, she's pretty amazing and all those other things. But to get her on camera is going to be interesting, but don't tell her.
Okay.
I'm sure she's not listening. So she probably is. But Dan Fosse was an acting teacher that Willie studied with, and my friend Fisher Stevens and I were doing Brighton Beach Memoirs in 1983, and I was looking for an acting school, an acting teacher, and he said, "You got to come meet Dan Fosse," and so that was 30 years ago, and I started taking class there, and I loved it. And the kids that came through there in the 80s were amazing. And the scene work was often some of the best theater you'd see in New York at the time. And that sounds really vain, but it was pretty good. And people were really doing a lot of good work. And he was also an art collector. You know, he ran the Actors Institute, and he was teaching kind of workshops as well, and the mastery and things like that, and was an art emotional workshop that he had created, and yet there would be Basquiat's on the wall of the Actors Studio. You know, he was he had some pretty amazing paintings up, and we became friends. And then he moved. We became great friends, and sort of family. And then Ty was, you know, Devin's. I mean, she was born. I don't know what year she was born, but I don't want to give like her age, but. She was a kid then running around before Francesca was even born. And he moved to Los Angeles, became an executive at Paramount Studios of comedy development there, and developed comedy series for Paramount for years, Paramount Television. And he's just my, you know, surrogate spiritual father.
You know, that's so cool.
And Ty and Francesca are like my sisters, and you know, and so we just, you know, we were always looking to go, well, how do we work together, you know, and over the years, you know, how do you do that? He would you get hired for a Paramount show, an episode of something, but it's like, it's not real collaboration. And it's like, and in the old days, in the 90s and the early 2000s, it was still too expensive to do an independent movie. You need $1 million or whatever like that. You know, now, because it's the web and the cameras, you know, it was like, I don't know much about the camera world, the digital camera world, but the cameras that Laura and Jorge were using are, you know, I was just in an episode of CSI Miami, and we had a shot where I'm in a car driving, and the cameraman is sitting next to me, which looks like he's holding a single lens reflex. He's holding like a Canon. You know, I don't know what kind of camera it was, like one of the red camera, they call it. But it's like the old days, you'd have to build a rig, and it was sitting outside the car, and the boom guy is crouched, hiding under the seats, you know. And this is like, there's a guy sitting next to you with a handheld, looks like a little handheld camera. And he's shooting a major network show with this little thing. And so it's inexpensive, it's fast, and so this is, it's like it's all the right time. We're all ready for it. We're all enjoying each other's company and the process. And then the product ends up being really, you know, goofy and funny. And we're all on the same sort of apocalyptic art world comic partner buddy comedy page.
I have word that on your web series you used the Panasonic HVX on hold.
I take your word for it.
Meaningless to many. It's true. It's very true. But the techies know what they're talking about. You know, it is truly amazing. I used to be disappointed because some of the independent movies I was doing, you know, we were shooting on Canons and small little cameras, and I was like, oh, I miss the big Airflex and the big Panavision cameras and all this good stuff, because that was like you were making movies. And now everything is so small. I mean, when they talked about doing the Bourne Identity with a handheld camera, you know, kind of thing, and going through the crowds and stealing the shots and stuff. Or, you know, I mean, you just go, wow, you know, technology has changed. And now, frankly, with the GoCam, which is a Canon GoCam, where you can put it on your head and go skydiving or skiing or underwater or any number of things,
right.
You can take a high-def camera into situations that, you know, for web series and for independent films and television into places you could never have done before.
Right.
It is truly, truly outstanding. Mm-hmm. And then when you have somebody like Ty who knows how to edit, knows how to do special effects and mm-hmm. work with it, you know, that makes for a good team. Well, that's awesome. Because I did notice, I mean, let me talk about that, because the production value, and I don't want to get necessarily into specific cost, you know, what your show costs, but
mm-hmm.
but it's not shot like, you know, a run and gun web series. It's got a nice production value to it. It's got nice, you know, camera work, good, you know, framing, nice, you know, movement to the camera and shots and things like people obviously know what they're doing. I don't mean to say that in any kind of, I mean, it to me that didn't sound right when I said it. So, you know, it's a professionally done show. So, it truly is. But what was it? But that's what I want to ask you. Like, what size crew what's the behind the scenes of your show like?
There's again, the Ty, another one of her many hats, and Jack Monroe produced it, and they got a great crew. There was, you know, there's a Renee Hall costume designer, Melissa Broker, William Kenton were production designers in several of the episodes. We have Rob Gokey's composer. They put together a team. And so there's a shot in episode 5 where we're doing this kind of meta thing where we're watching the show being shot. And we pull back and we see the crew, and that's about the crew. We had boom people. We had that. They were really
the boom
crew.
Is in the shot.
Yeah, the boom, the cameraman. We pull back and we're watching a scene being shot, and so it was two cameras. And so we're watching the cameraman shoot with another camera and watching, you know, filming the camera being shot. And we shot with like a little film crew, and I was often sort of antsy about it. You know, I was wrong because I thought I wanted more. I was expecting run and gun, which is what I wanted. I wanted it web. I wanted it fast and improvised and just, you know, catch it if you catch it kind of thing. I don't want coverage. You know, I wanted it. That's what I wanted. And Dan Fossey directed the episode 2 and 3, which are excellent. And he was more from the school of let's get coverage. I need to get this. I need to get that. And I was like, why are we waiting? Why are we taking so? There's 7-8 episodes. We should be done by lunch, you know. And but he was right, and Ty was right to kind of slow down that process, get coverage, and then I mean, again, the editing process took a long time because there was a lot of special effects. I mean, I think we shot the first 2 episodes in. Let me get my dates wrong. January 11, no, December, it was before Christmas, so December, geez, 2010, we shot the last 4 episodes. And so a year earlier, like, we shot 2 episodes, and it took all those, like, a year to edit those 2 episodes. And I was really, I was pretty frustrated. I was like, why, what is going on? You know, why are we waiting? You know, and Ty said, no, let's make sure we get all six together. And there was no rush, really. The truth was, let's get these right the way we want them. And so when we shot the two, she added them. I thought, let's put them up, you know. And she was like, no, let's wait and let's do Dan two. Let's do four more. And I was like, so we have a six episode arc. So then I was like, okay, great. And I ended up, you know, collaborating with Ty and Jack and going, what are the stories? And I wrote most of them. And then we shot those and then edited those. And I kept going, it's been 2 years since we shot the first one. You know, it's like, where's the web of it? Where is the web of it? The speed and the slap it up. And then I looked at the final products, and Ty had made them films. She made them short web films with her editing and the special effects. And then I started to get on board and go, oh, okay, so what if we, how about this? And can we try that? And she's like, yeah, let's make them. And so I think our process will speed up somewhat, I hope, with the second season. I think because now we know what we're doing and we know a bit of the look of the show. And so I can write and we can write towards these kind of silly cutaways that we wanted. And so hopefully there'll be process will speed up. But my dream is to make a really good run and gun one. And I'm going to write one of those too. You know, I have ambitions of making, I mean, I love Whole Day Down. I love it. And, but I'm sort of want to see what it's like to do, I like what you described it, run and gun. Let's shoot it, improvise it, get great people, edit quickly, and put up this story.
Well, you seem, I mean, in talking with you about it as creator and as writer and with your team, I mean, so eclectic in your approach to say, you know, I'd like to run and gun one, I'd like to do a foreign language one, I'd be,
oh, yeah,
you know, animation. I mean, that's really very admirable and very cool. I think, by the way, the approach that Ty took serves you better in the long run, from what I understand of web series. And by, I am no means an expert, but it seems that some people have, and I very much would go, okay, I've shot 2 minutes or 5 minutes or a half hour or whatever it is, let's put it up and then do the next one. And it seems that the wisdom suggests, if you have a number of shows, or in your case, a season or an arc of shows, that you better able to hook the viewer and keep them interested, because they can go from show to show to show to show, as long as they're, you know, or if you're doing it, as long as the time is compressed, without losing interest or forgetting about it, where some people put up a show and then months later put up another one, they have so much trouble getting anyone to come back.
Because I agree. I think I was wrong and impatient, and Ty was right to wait and to refine the episodes. And so, yeah, they look, you know, I will bet it cost, it didn't cost a lot to make, but it cost way more than I would imagine the most webisodes are shot for.
And I would not be surprised in that. Let me ask you about the difference, and I'm going to have to take a break in a short period of time, but about the acting versus writing versus directing in these for you, you know, wearing the different hats.
Mm-hmm. You just want to, what was the difference?
You're acting in it. Now, are you also directing episodes that you're acting in?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, Dan has directed an episode, or you have other people direct episodes. How do you work that all out? And are you using a monitor to go back and look at your work, or are you just...
Yeah, you know, I don't even remember. I think there was a monitor, but I think for the most part I was sort of watching. Like, I'd look at the monitor to see how the shot looked. But basically, mm-hmm. I wanted to be right there on top of the actors going, oh, that's great, or try this, or try that, you know, I think it's this. And it was really more fun than I've ever had. When I wrote and acted in the movie Just a Kiss, that was up until then the most fun I'd ever had, because it was like all these people are here, these really great actors, and my friend Fisher's directing it, and it was like I wrote this script and I knew what everybody's lines were. But now this, it's the same thing. I sort of knew everybody's lines, I knew what I'd written, I knew what I wanted, and fortunately Dan gave me the opportunity to realize this kind of bizarre vision and let it be as odd as I would like a web series, or this particular web series, to be. It's really how Ty and I kind of see the world, and so how we see art or web series, whatever this new medium is. And so the writing was, we would talk about story, but I would basically write the 7 pages pretty quickly, because, I don't know, it just came easily. It was funny and weird, and we just got weirder, and then we'd get notes, and then we'd write them back. I'd write again. And then when we got on the set, it was like, let's go. You know, she found a great production team, and so there was always really interesting sets, and I would, you know, make sure Willie and I would dress in something silly, and then we would rehearse the scene. We just sort of shoot the scenes, you know the lines, go. And we basically, you know, we pretty much shot a whole episode each day. And it was an awful lot of fun.
Oh, that's very cool. Well, let me take a short break, and then we'll be right back. I want to remind my listeners, you're listening to Mr. Patrick Breen. The web series is Whole Day Down. You can find it at wholedaydown.tv, wholedaydown.tv. They also have a Facebook page for Whole Day Down. And so go and check that out as well. And we'll be back with Patrick in just a moment. You're listening to Rex Ikes Movie Beat, and the official web address is rexsikes.com. That's my name, Rex Ikes. And all we ask of you, if you're listening live or archived, is to leave comments before you leave today. Go ahead and leave comments at the player. It's under the comment window is actually underneath the player. It's sometimes not visible depending on the browser you're using until after the player shuts down. But do take a moment, wait, and leave comments. Or if you're listening to this as a podcast, rate and review the podcast. That's how you help us and help my guests, because it helps us get a greater presence on the Internet, helps other people to find us who might not otherwise discover the show. And that is the other way you can help us. Tell others, reach out, tweet, Facebook, call, email, or talk to them in person and just say, hey, you know, you got to listen to the show. It's a nuts and bolts how-to show for filmmakers and for actors. All right. Upcoming guests will include Mr. Peter Marshall. He's my next guest on Thursday the 15th. We are in the middle of the director series. We're at like episode 16 or 70. I don't even know what episode we're at off the top of my head right now. But it is a series for directors, for filmmakers, on breaking down the script and what's necessary for pre-production and production, and then working with actors and blocking and getting performances and all that. So you're going to want to wherever you join us, if you join us on the very next episode and it's your first one, join us there. And then at your leisure, go back and listen to the others. Doug Richardson is a screenwriter. He's written Bad Boys and Die Hard 2 and Money Train and movies like that. He's going to be joining us on the 20th. Actor Nick Mancuso returns on the 22nd. He also writes and directs and obviously has been acting for many years. Gary King is a director. He's going to join us on the 27th. He's got a new movie out, a musical that he's directed. And you're going to want to hear all about that. I always think anybody who's willing to undertake the directing of a musical is someone I want to listen to, because just the amount of effort and work that goes into something like that is amazing. LaQuanda Plant is a casting director. She's out of Atlanta, and she'll be joining us on the 29th, and that's all of the guests I'm going to tell you about until the end of April. Until the end of March. There's more coming up, obviously, each and every week. Girls Gone Dead, the movie that I co-produced and line-produced in Florida, is premiering on the 28th in South Beach, so for those in that listening area, go ahead and check it out. I believe it's sold out, but see if you can still get tickets. And the Field Film Fest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is held the 30th of March at the Wauwatosa West high school, and so people want to go to the Field Film Festival. It's a film festival, actually, that I started with some other people a couple of years back, and it's now grown on its own, so go ahead and check that out. As we return to listen to Mr. Patrick Breen. Well, Patrick, we're back.
Hey.
And I'm glad that we are. This is all very fascinating. I want to come back. I want to continue to talk about the web series, but let's do stop and talk about the making of your feature film. Because you wrote the film, and then you acted and directed. So tell us about that process. I'm kind of throwing it out there as a generic question. I'll have more questions as we go along. But I mean, you wrote a movie. How did you get it made? I mean, not everybody's able to do that.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I wrote a play called Marking, and it was done off Broadway by my good friend Lizzie Gottlieb, and she directed it in her company back. I don't even remember what year it was, 96 or something. But listen to this cast. This is the play. It was Brian O'Byrne, Amy Ryan, Peter Dinklage, Seth Gilliam, Maria Tucci, we'll leave out Francie Swift and Sarah Knowlton, but and so we ran, you know, a couple of weeks, and I wrote it for Peter Dinklage because I saw him off Broadway in a friend's play, Peter Hedges' play, and I wrote this kind of bizarre play that is, you know, thematically or at least stylistically related to Hold Day Down, because this is how I like to write. It was time jumps, and it was a kind of parallel stories and consequences of infidelity, but through kind of a time warp. It was, you know, very strange. And then my good friend Fisher had a company called Green Street at the time, and he had a film. And I, you know, as on my own, I had just adapted it into a screenplay after the play finished, and nobody was interested. I didn't even try to get anybody interested. And then Fisher had at Green Street. They had a film fall through. Their funding fell through or something. And I said, Fish, I wrote a screenplay for Marking, and why don't we just sit in your office and read it together? And so we read it. We took turns with the parts. He and I just sat in the office and read it together. And it was pretty funny, you know, and he liked it. And then he got his partner, Johnny Panotti, interested, and we all sat and read it. We did a big reading of it with some of the actors that we used in the movie. Marissa Tomei did the reading as well. I don't remember. But and then Fisher, because he's a beloved character in the theater world, he assembled a killer cast. Kay Diggs and Sarah Sedgwick and Lionel Gard and Marissa and Zoe Caldwell. And I got to play the role that I wrote for Peter Dinklage because I wanted to be in a movie that I wrote, you know, and I think it probably would have worked better with Peter in the role in retrospect, but whatever. I chose to perform in the film, and it was absolute gas. It was so much fun. And we did it for very little money. I think it was like $1 million budget. I mean, comparing $1 million is a lot of money, but you know, shot it 22 days or something like that. And it was Fisher's first directing credit. He's doing another one finally. He's shooting in Los Angeles right now. It's his second film, even though he was involved in the making of The Cove that he won an Academy Award for with the rest of the creative people on that film. This is a narrative, a fictional film that he's directing. And so, yeah, that process was just, again, just sort of fortunate. And there was an accidental, you know, a slot opened up. My good friend ran this company. We read this screenplay together, and we liked it and thought we got people on board, and we could make it inexpensively if we had enough stars, and Fisher was able to kind of, you know, coax everybody. He's got this, you know, Fisher was doing a Carousel on Broadway, and Kay Diggs, the actor, was his understudy. And I don't remember what year this was. And Kay wanted to go on because he had friends or family in town or something, and Fisher said, sure. And so he called in sick, and by the time we were making Just a Kiss, Kay was a star, And so Fisher could call in that favor. He'd go, hey, remember that day you wanted to go on in Carousel? Would you do my movie for a week?
Oh, cool.
And Jay ends up being, you know, fantastic in the movie and really funny, and he's a friend. He and I ended up doing a series together, Kevin Hill, in 2004, 2005. And he might have done it even without owing Fisher a favor. But so it was, you know, a lot of stars and planets have to align
right.
to get an independent movie made for $1 million, you know, and a web series you can just do now. You can just bring it back to the zeitgeist. The present time is so, we're so fortunate to be living right now. Because you can, if you have an idea, you can make it. And you're right. It does.
Go ahead.
It does take a certain amount of, you know, it can't be slapdash, but because, yeah, you're right. Who's going to find it? If you put it up right away, then you wait 2 months. Who's going to find the second episode? You know, there must be a lot of material out there now. You know, there is a lot of material out there now. But there seems to be more and more venues where people sort of refine it, little film festivals, little web festivals, or people that their job, the blogs, are to kind of look at web series. I mean, how did we, you know, I get to do this interview with you, you know.
And likewise.
I think it's Brian Rhoda, our publicity person that, you know, Ty found, who's he doesn't make any money really. I mean, but he works primarily in the web, you know. He finds ways in which people can bring attention to their shows.
Right.
You know. And we got a little article in the LA Weekly several weeks ago, which was it was on their blog, and they printed it in the one of their weekly issues. It was a 2-column article on the web series. And I think that's kind of unusual, and I think it speaks to that it's worth taking some time and making your show a bit more quality, you know. And I don't think it takes. You have to be a bit more adept at your editing, which is why Ty is so invaluable, because she did all the special effects, she did all the editing on her computer. You know, it reminds me of that guy that did the film Monster or Monsters. I think it was black and white. Jeez, it was a sci-fi movie, a monster movie that he made on his computer. You know, the special effects he did on his computer, and came out maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And it's pretty good. You know, the story's good, and the monsters are, you know, there, and they're slithery and tentacly and gigantic kind of alien creatures. The big story was that he made all this, that he did all the special effects on his laptop. And so, yeah, you have to learn how to do it, and it takes some hours, but you can do it.
You know what amazes me is that, you know, at one time there was gatekeeping, you know. I mean, there was normal distribution channels in the studios and trying to get your movies made and the cost of raw stock, and now it's consumer model. You can go out and buy a camera at you know, any number of outlets and buy some equipment and buy some software and buy computers, and you can literally make web series or feature films or short films, you know, almost not. I mean, I know people who've done it entirely on their own, you know, doing an animated thing or something in their house. But the
right.
point being is with very little fanfare, you can make something that's quite good. And the interesting thing for me is that I'm not a huge internet fan, because for a long time I was like, you know, it seems like it's just a waste of my time. And I've got people my age and older, you know, who would sit and they would project, you know, the internet, you know, YouTube up on their living room walls or on widescreens and things like that. And they just spend hours surfing the internet, you know, as if they were watching TV. And I just was not that person, because I'd go, I don't want to waste my time with 4 minutes of something, you know. But having said that, what I think is fascinating is that the internet polices itself. Is the quality that is getting better and better all the time because the technology is getting better. But not only that, because the technology has gotten better, people are getting better, and so they're able to edit and they're able to do things and they're able to do special effects that they weren't able to do a few years ago. So the quality of what you're able to watch on the internet gets better, and as that does, you get more, I guess, refined viewership. My daughter loves to watch certain things that I would never watch. But there's that market, there's that whole band of kids who will do that and watch that, and I may never see it. But there's a whole band of people in my age group or my interest group for which there's tons of things out there. You know what I mean? I mean, we're not at a loss for anything anymore in terms of entertainment. At one time, I would have said there's too much competition and too much white noise and, you know, and junk. But the cream is rising to the top. You know, it's all being done pretty much on its own. You know, viewers' sensibilities are getting better, I guess. You know, and so when you get a show like yours, when you get quality shows with quality talent, you know, quality writing, and you put that on the internet, the it's going to be found eventually. You know what I mean? I mean, the audience, it's going to have the audience because it's the pinnacle point. Today, maybe, that hopefully, you know, others can aspire to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like for years you had to go to film schools and, you know, I mean, yeah, people would, you know, get their Super 8 camera and maybe, you know, make a movie and learn to edit, but it was time-consuming and, you know, and messy and, you know, difficult. But people with the passion for making films did it. You hear about it all the time. The people that are filmmakers now, that's what they did in the 80s or whatever. But now, I mean, Ty was talking about making little films maybe for Valentine's Day, little promos. Uh-huh. And I went, something like this. I picked up my iPhone. I put it on Movie. I filmed myself improvising some little goofy Valentine's Day thing. I looked at it. I sent it to Ty, and then she watched it. You know, like I made like a little template for maybe a little short promo film on my phone. And I was able to, I didn't edit it, but I sent it to her, you know, and she could watch it and go, well, okay, yeah, something like that. Let's try this, you know. So it's like the kids that are
right
working out and educating themselves in the web series, they'll go like, yeah, they'll make stuff with their phones and they'll put them on the computer and they'll edit them and they'll get all this practical experience. And maybe it'll be crap at the beginning, you know. Maybe it'll just, but you get better if you keep doing it. And if you like what you see, and maybe you get a little encouragement, a couple of people watch it, your friends watch it, your mom, whatever. But then it's like, you go, and then maybe you watch something with a bit more sophistication. You know, like Hold Day Down. And I mean that just in terms of our editing and our production, you know, values and our, whatever. And and you go like, oh, you aspire to maybe, oh, let's make it a bit better. You can, you know, maybe you won't have the budget that we had today, but you could still go, well, what's the quality? Why is that quality better? Maybe my writing needs some improving, you know? And they do that. And you can still make terrific 5 minutes, 4 minutes films that tell a story that you want to tell, that the artist, the girl, the boy, anybody wants to tell. And you can do it. And you should, and they should. Everybody should be doing it. And like you said, I think the quality will rise to the top. People will go like, wow, I found this crazy story about a cat. You know, and you got to watch this. It's written by a 6-year-old.
You know? It is fascinating. I mean, my daughter is very prolific with videos. She video vlogs. She edits music videos. She does all these things.
How old is she?
14. Yeah, she's going to be 14.
Right.
And she's very busy, but she took down, you know, like, I don't know, maybe 100 videos at one point. And I was upset. I was like, honey, this is historic. I mean, she was like, well, they aren't, you know, my work has progressed. I don't want that stuff up there anymore. That's crap, Dad. you know, it was my early stuff. And I was like, well, just make it private so that I can look at it, because that's my record of you. Don't lose it. Don't throw it away. But anyway, so I mean, people will change their work, you know, as they advance, they can do that. They can say, here's my early work, and it was crap, or they can remove it and be left with other things. I mean, it's really a fascinating world, with regard to what people are capable of, and with crowdfunding, everybody that I know who is anybody in this business will repeatedly say to me and or to others, just go out and make it, get it on the internet. You know, we're watching. If it's good, we'll see it. You know, somebody will find it. Just do it. Make your own content. If you're an actor, there's no excuse to sit home and pine and wait for your agent to call. You've got to be proactive and go out and generate your own content now.
What is that term now, the pilot, a concept pilot or something like that? Proof of concept. That's it. These proof of concept. I may be saying the wrong word, but I think it's that. Where people will just... I was so impressed. There's a kid who was on CSI Miami with me. His name is Matt Angel. His father wrote for X-Files. And he's an actor, and he's 20, 21 or something like that. And he wrote 15-minute pilot that he's going to shoot, you know? And he kickstarted it. He crowdsourced it, and he got the money. And it's like, it's a proof of concept pilot, 15 minutes. People who are reading it like it. It's very high quality, and he's going to shoot it, you know?
That's awesome.
And it's like, and it's not on the network or whatever, but it's like people have a really decent... It's no longer you just like read the script, you know, oh, just send me the pilot, you know, send me the script and I'll read it. You know, it's like, no, I'm going to show it to you, and I'm going to get really good actors in it because it's written well, and I'm going to shoot it, and I'm going to pay people. I'm going to pay my crew, you know.
It's awesome,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is truly awesome. Hey, I want to ask you an important question, and this is a very personal, important question for me. I have written screenplays, and I can imagine writing a screenplay. I cannot wrap my head around writing a play. And I've been, as an actor, I've performed in plays, I've read lots of plays, but the idea of it seems daunting to me. And you write plays and screenplays.
Right.
How does it differ? How does the task load and the approach differ between going, okay, I'm writing mostly, the way I think of it is I'm writing a talking piece versus like an action piece with talking. You know what I mean? I mean, you're dialogue heavy in a play, and you don't have to be in a film, although it could be.
Right.
How do you further a story? How do you create an entire story with people conversing? I mean, that's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, and then I would ask you the same question, only in reverse. Like, I cannot write a screenplay from scratch. You know, it's like the two screenplays I've written, both have been sold. One was made into a movie, right? They were both plays first. I wrote them as a play and then adapted them to screenplays because I had the whole story there. So I think I might be good at adapting novels, maybe. But maybe I'm probably just good at adapting my own plays to screenplays. But, play is Martin McDonagh, the playwright who wrote The Beauty Queen of Menon and Lonesome West and The Lieutenant of Inishmore, things like that. His first movie was In Bruges. Do you remember that film?
What?
In Bruges, it was called. Colin Farrell and somebody else.
I don't think I saw it. No, I don't.
He's an Irish writer, and he writes all these great plays. And he said the difference between films and plays are, in a play, I have eight scenes. The whole play is eight scenes, right? And in a movie, the first page could have eight scenes.
Right.
You know? And it was like, what? That's so crazy. And so I tend to see things. I tend to like people talking. And so I started writing plays because I was from the theater. I grew up in New York and went to NYU and formed the Naked Angels, the Manhattan Class Company, in my 20s, in the 80s, and we did plays. We did 50 plays. We would do new plays. We had at MCC, they were always doing short plays, one-act festival, things like that. It was easier to produce, and you could get more people involved, etc. And so I started writing one-act plays for MCC, and then performing in plays of, you know, we had such crazy, amazing writers at Naked Angels, like John Robin Bates, Kenny Lonergan, Warren Light, Nicole Burdett, Teresa Rebeck, Frank Pugliese. I mean, just a ton of people just starting out doing their thing. And so I learned, you learn structure, and you learn that dialogue is so in the theater. It's just this intimate little storytelling place. You know, not the movie theater, the theater, it's a play theater. And so that's my first love. You know, I like people talking and it being really odd. And I think I'm better at writing short pieces, which is why I think my talents are more geared towards web series, because, like I said this before, but my attention span is tops 7 minutes. And so that's, but in our web series, in our scene, there's like 20 scenes. We just cut away and we go this, what about a flashback? What about an interview? And that's a lot of that is Ty, where she just goes, well, let's put this in. Let's put this in. How do we put in some interviews or cutaways or stuff like that? She understands filmic writing and editing way more than I do. If it was up to me, I would write one 7-minute scene, and that would be an episode. In fact, I'll probably do that at one point.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But it's just, you start people talking, you come up with a, Rex, you come up with an idea where you go like, God, I heard these, overheard these two people talking, you know, online at the Dunkin' Donuts, and they said something really provocative that made me think of this, and you think about, and you imagine their lives, then you imagine the scene where they're going home, and they talk to their wives, and are they having an affair, and then are they, you know, do they have some sort of plot, are they going to get fired from their job, and it's like, and they just, they things still happen in a dramatic way, and it has to be conflict and all that in a play. But you don't have to worry so much about showing people what's happening. And it's not telling people what's happening. It's like things happen in words. You know, and I like that.
I guess for me, I mean, I can imagine you know, saying, okay, this scene, you know, like if I write a screenplay, you know, here are my things that I think are going to happen in the thing. And one thing's going to take place in, say, a living room or something, and there's this conversation. So I can write the dialogue for that. And then obviously I'm going to say, and then, you know, at the park, this is going on. And then subsequently that, and then maybe back to the living room. But with the play, I'm going, okay, now I've got an hour or 2 hours, depending on the length of the play, or a half hour or whatever. Of the people in the living room. And I've got to make it interesting and compelling,
right.
And the dialogue has got to carry it, and it's got to arc and develop, and it's got to lead somewhere. You know, like I mean I watched My Dinner with Andre. You know, I mean, it's a comedy.
I love that movie.
You know, but I mean, I couldn't write My Dinner with Andre, you know. I mean, it you know, that kind of thing. So it's an amazing, being a playwright to me is just an amazing discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
So,
it's different. And Wally Shawn is a playwright.
I applaud you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I envy you, because again, I've been working on a screenplay, this crazy kind of science fiction comedy that I started from scratch, and I took 5 structure classes at UCLA, film structure. And I'm, you know, in a writer's group in New York now, and I'm still unable to finish it. And I'm sure it's been 10 years since I had the idea. So I can't seem to figure out how to write action sequences, and, you know, and my scenes, like as soon as I get 2 people together, they end up talking for 3 pages, and everybody says, you can't have a 3-page scene in a movie. And I'm like, but they're not finished talking yet. You know, so
funny.
Anyway, it'll take some time, but I am determined to understand structure in film.
Wow. Now, I should tell you, we've got literally about 14 minutes left or so in our conversation, and I am enjoying this. Did you begin as a child actor in television?
No. I was a Staten Island.
Were you on a soap opera?
No. I was a. I think one of the first gigs I ever got was like an extra in an episode of Brian's Hope. I was in college. I was 19 or 20.
Wow.
But no, I didn't. I never got any.
How did you start?
I was in Staten Island. I was doing plays in high school, in junior high school. I was doing stuff. I really dug getting on stage, and I wasn't afraid. And but then once I graduated high school, I thought I gotta make money, because nobody in my family was in show business. Nobody was in the theater. Nobody was an actor. You know, they were eccentric, but nobody they weren't blue collar, but they weren't white collar. They were sort of like sky blue collar, I guess. But I went to Hunter College for a year, and I decided I was going to study, you know, computer science or something like that. I knew I liked science. I should have gone into something like archaeology or something that appealed to me, but I thought I needed to make a living. I'm now in college, and I needed to come up with a job, and I thought I'd made a mistake when I went. Not that Hunter was bad. Hunter was good. But I thought, if I'm going to – I like acting. I really like it. I should probably give it a shot, because what if you only go around once? You know, why don't I try? And so I took out a bunch of loans, and I applied to NYU undergraduate drama. And I got in, and I was there for 2.5 semesters, and I graduated. And that was there that I met Robert Lapone, who was teaching a class, and Bernie Telsey, who was in my class, and – he would end up being my roommate in college, and we formed the Manhattan Class Company together out of NYU. And many of the people that I ended up, like a handful of the people that I ended up creating Naked Angels with, went to NYU at that time. It was all undergraduate people: Gina Gershon, Nancy Travis, Jace Alexander, Jack Merrill, Jennifer Espeth. I mean, people were at NYU. Jeffrey Knox, who wrote Next Fall, that I ended up doing on Broadway 2 years ago. He was at NYU at the same time. So it was this crazy confluence of people from the suburbs and out of the country who were in undergraduate drama. We weren't in their graduate program, which was this fantastic professional program. People come out of there, they work, they're fantastic, they're talented. We were undergraduate kind of like grunts. NYU would produce 300 actors in their undergraduate program in different studios. But we somehow found each other in those two different theater companies, MCC and Naked Angel. And within 2 years, by 1986 or so, they had both formed, both of those theater companies. And I was involved with both, and I did a lot of plays. And I got my first job, and, you know, I got a job before those, well, we were making, MCC was created, but I got, you know, Brighton Beach Memoirs in 1983, and that was my first job.
Wow. Well, you know, when you look over your career, say, on IMDb, especially in terms of television, you have an amazing array of shows, and not only that, but you have a high percentage of returning episodes in every show. Like, you know, there's some shows that you're in once, but there's a lot of shows you're in two times or three times or five times. I mean, that's always very impressive, I think, when you see an actor who's been able to accomplish that, to come back to the show, you know, have the character run through, you know, a number of episodes.
That is really fortunate, yeah, because it's always nice to get a couple of checks out of an episode. But I think the bulk of the episodes I've done were just one-offs, you know. Often I do them, the show get canceled that season. So there was no point, there was no way to come back. But yeah, you know, New York-y things like Law and Order and Good Wife now, and I've come back twice there. And it definitely pays the bills better than, I mean, I did a play at MCC this past December, and it's $300 and something a week. And then, right before we began, I did an episode of Good Wife, which made more. I made more than the whole 2.5 months at NBC in the 1 week. And so, yeah, it's a balance. I love the theater and I prefer it. And I feel like that's what I do best. And but I'm incredibly grateful and very happy to do television whenever I can.
And so, that's very cool. And you prefer New York to L.A.?
For now. I mean, yeah, I do at the moment. I have an apartment in Los Angeles as well, and I have great friends there, and I'm just, like I said, I just did this episode of CSI Miami in January, and happy to work in both places. But I'm from New York, and I prefer the theater, and so this is probably where I'm going to be for the next foreseeable future.
So, and can we talk about that future in terms of what's coming up or plans for the next season? I mean, you mentioned that some of the different kinds of things you do, but is there any other particular plans for season two of Whole Day Down and or other projects that you wish to talk about or can talk about?
Season two is still in the gestation phase, and I use that term cunningly, I guess, because it's about the pregnancy of my character's wife, and whether it's Willie's kid or my kid or a third party. Ty and I are having a lot of fun coming up with season two, and I'm really hoping we get to the writing this month and next, and shoot in August. I think that would be good. Willie's off from his show, and I want to finish this screenplay, this science fiction comedy that I've been working on for a long time, determined to finish it. And then I'm going to be auditioning for plays here in town, television when I can, and I'm unemployed at the moment, and that can be a little troublesome at times, but it's, I don't know, the writing the web series, I keep, every time I think it's bleakest career-wise, I think there's something about this that is my favorite thing I'm doing, the web series, the idea behind it, the shooting of it, the getting it done. It's realized. It's like, I don't get stories in the LA Weekly. I don't get radio interviews, you know, based on my episode of Good Wife. You know what I mean? It's like I'm doing this because I was fortunate enough to rally with my friends and family, the Fosseys and Willie and John Tenney, I've known forever, Shiri Appleby, and I did a series when she was 12, you know, Norman Lear series, John Ailes. You know, people I've known, and we all got together and made this series. It's really fun, and I can tell it is the right direction to pursue. You know, I can just, and not just from the encouragement we're getting, although that's really terrific, and pretty much if you don't pay attention to the blessings that you get from work you do, then you may be missing something. Like, you go like, oh, it's just terrible. I could be really, you know, sad saying about everything. But it's like, no, it's like, I feel like I'm creating something. It's getting made. People are getting to see it. I'm collaborating with friends and family who I love. And it works, you know, and I'm 51 years old, and it's like, You don't have to be a 15-year-old, and I'm incredibly impressed with your daughter, you know, who's got all these videos and things up and stuff. But it's everybody. You can make things.
Right.
If you've ever been frustrated or felt there's no way in to the business or to creating films, the web is that new horizon.
Well, and what I really liked that was you said when you said, well, I'm 51, is that I think so many actors, and I know I felt that way when I was a young teenager, young actor, or in my 20s, that you have to make it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that your work, you know, you have to have accomplished something by the time you're 20 or by the time you're 25. And and with the internet and what web series and the production capabilities of today are, is you can be 80 years old doing this. You know, you can
I'd love
find
to see a web series about a bunch of 80 year olds.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I mean, it would be. But it's not out of the realm of possibility, you know, for someone
Eastwood
who's...
It could be Clint Eastwood. I'm trying to think of the 80-year-olds who could do web series.
Yeah, which 80? But the other thing that you said that I think is very important for up-and-coming film people to understand is, you know, we've talked about Hollywood and sometimes how it's closed or how tough it is to get into the business and for any number of reasons. And one of those reasons is people work with people that they know and people that they like, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're, you know, putting together a web series to say, hey, I get to work with people I, you know, my family, my friends, you know, coworkers, people I...
Mm-hmm.
So, but anybody can do that now. They can gather their... It helps if you've got lots of really talented friends. But
it does.
But anybody can gather their friends or their family and create today. And so, you know, you pointed out some really important things to listeners in that it doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter, you know, what you've got because you could probably afford to get something. And the key is just to do it. So, I mean, it is it's truly, truly, you know, inspiring that, you know, I hate to use a trite advertising slogan, but just do it, you know.
I completely agree.
Yeah,
it's like I was just teaching a class at MCC over on Saturday, and it was a bunch of high school kids. They take an acting class there, and I was just kind of a guest artist came in and started talking to them, and I was like, "Make it happen, do it." I mean, we did it in the theater in the '80s with MCC and Naked Angels. We just got together and started making plays, right? And then figured out, were we going to make any money? Who knows? That's not what it's about. It's like, make things, you know. It takes, what is that Malcolm Gladwell Outliers book where he said it takes 10,000 hours to kind of master any skill or profession or art, you know. It's like you can start today, you know, put a couple hours in on your laptop. And who was it that used to, you know, was it Michael Crichton? He was a lawyer. He'd get to work early and use the computer in his office. And write his first novel, you know? It's like, you know, libraries have computers, you know, that you can borrow, things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I got to tell you, we are at that point where we are going to have to say so long, but you have been an absolutely fascinating guest. I'd love to have you back in the future, too.
Thank you.
And I do appreciate everything. I enjoyed the series. It's a web series called The Whole Day Down. You can find it at wholedaydown.tv, wholedaydown.tv, or on YouTube, Whole Day Down. You can find it there. And it's Mr. Patrick Breen and Willie Garson and Dan and Ty. Well, she's not in it, but she edits it behind the scenes. Fosse and so many others. You're going to want to take a look at it and be sure to check out their Facebook page. Do you have a Twitter? Or anything that there's Whole Day Down at Whole Day Down.
I wonder if Whole Day Down does. I mean,
it does. It does. There is a Whole Day Down.
There
is a Whole Day Down Twitter account.
Yeah.
So you can follow Whole Day Down on Twitter as well. And this has been awesome. So I appreciate it so very much. I'm going to talk to you in just a couple minutes, but we're going to have to say goodbye. And again, I thank you for being here and for the entertainment you provide in the web show. And have a great rest of the day, and good luck
with
all the future projects and everything.
Thank you. You too, and it was a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Patrick.
Okay.
That's Mr. Patrick Breen, and I want to thank him for joining us today, and his co-star, Willie Garson, for having joined us to talk about Whole Day Down in a previous show. So if you haven't heard Willie yet, go back and listen to that. And as I suggest, go back and listen to all of the fantastic interviews by all my fabulous guests. But you're listening to Rex Sykes Movie Beat at rexsykes.com. And all of these interviews are archived right there at the website for your listening pleasure 24/7. They're also available as podcasts at the iTunes stores. All of this is brought to you free, so all we ask you to do is leave comments before you go away, whether you're listening archived or live. and rate and review the shows as the podcast, and spread the word. Share it. Share it on your Facebook walls, by Twitter, by email, by phone, in person. Tell other people. You know, if you help me spread the word, you benefit, but then so will your other filmmaker fans and friends and connections. So I want to thank Patrick Breen again, a very fascinating guest, and you, the readers and listeners of Movie Beat. Remember, we got many more exciting guests coming up in the near future, so be sure to stay tuned. Please keep sharing the website. Peter Marshall comes up next on the 15th of March. And you can become a member, or I should say a friend, of the Rex Sykes Movie Beat Facebook Friends page by clicking on the like button there at Rex Sykes Movie Beat Friends. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rex Sykes Movie BT. That last word is abbreviated, Rex Sykes Movie BT. Also have a YouTube channel, Rex Sykes Movie Beat. And everybody have a fabulous day. Make your movies, complete your projects. Until we meet the next time, that is a wrap.